Death Holler brought us Season 3, Slash or Pass. It became the classic horror film podcast of its time. And now Death Holler brings us the most shocking season ever. Season 4, Dead or Dead.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Imagine, if you will, that one of the hosts is absolutely terrified of zombies.
So, what's the plan? Bash him in the head. That seems to work out.
No, except the fact there is no escaping this horror. Death Holler brings back the dead. Death Holler, listener discretion is advised. With hospitality like this, you'll never want to leave. We hope you stay alive.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth.
And welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your host, Reverend Dr. Death, and joining me as always is my co-host, La Urena. Ready to get an eyeful of gore, Urena?
Literally.
The Italian zombie craze took off shortly after Dario Argento made a more action-oriented cut of George A. Romero's Dawn of the Dead, titled Zombie, and released it overseas. That's Z-O-M-B-I for Americans. Scrambling to match the success of that film, several films were dusted off, zombies added, and some of the most extreme gore and visual effects of the time were layered in to shock audiences. No other director exemplified this Italian zombie golden age more than Lucio Fulci from his first film, Zombie, or Zombie 2, as it was called in foreign markets, to his Gates of Hell trilogy. Fulci made sure the fans of gore got exactly, or of horror, got exactly the type of gore filled schlock that they were craving. So grab your trusty shotgun, wear some eye protection, and join us as we cover Zombie from 1979 and The Beyond from 1981. But first, if you're enjoying the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would take the time to like, comment, subscribe on whatever podcast platform you prefer. It helps us get more visibility on podcast listings and helps us grow. Also, consider following us on social media. You can find us on TikTok and Twitter under Death Holler Pod, and we can be found on Instagram and Facebook under Death Holler Podcast. We appreciate everyone who listens and hope you enjoy the show. First up, Zombie from 1979. Tagline, we are going to eat you, exclamation mark.
Like, I want to be mad, but I'm not. I don't. Was that a line in the movie?
No. So, I hear that, and I get what they're going for. it's obvious. But did you hear about the, this is a tangent, did you hear about the recent Wicked movie toy fiasco?
Wait, there was a toy fiasco?
Yes.
Oh, do tell.
So the Wicked movie, you know, the one with the Wicked Witch of the East and yes. Or whatever, or West, I guess it is, and she's... Anyways, they made toys. Mattel, I think it was, Hasbro made some toys. But they put a little link on the back of the little, you know, thing on the back of the box for people to go visit the website, you know, for the new movie.
Yeah.
They put the wrong address or web address on there. They put the address for wicked.com, which is a porn site. So a little tip for anybody out there, these are probably going, when they're doing a recall of them, if you can go out and get them before they pull them, then you might have a collector's item.
It's probably too late by the time this podcast comes out, but it doesn't hurt to go try. Like,
I bring all that up to say that I can imagine Wicked, whose main thing was always to make these cheap porn parodies of like real movies, making a zombie movie with a tagline, "We're going to eat you out."
I just shared a meme the other day, another tangent, but still related to zombies. And it was somebody getting attacked by a zombie in a video game. And it's somehow, it's their legs were spread wide open and it looks like the zombie's just going to Munchtown on them. that zombie was going to eat them.
We actually had that in a Scout's Guide, remember? Because the girl laying on the table, the zombie started getting a little freaky down there.
Yes, we did. Scout's Guide is getting us a lot of views on YouTube.
Directed by Lucio Fulci, of course. Written by Eliza Briganti and Dardano Sacchetti. Music by Fabrio Frizzi. And that's actually a bit pretty big name because his music is sought out by quite a few horror, soundtrack collectors. Budget of 410 million Italian lira, which equates to $221,400 U.S. dollars. That's a small budget for a movie, $221,000 U.S. dollars.
And this was also the 70s. Is that still, I know I ask this all the time, but was that still a small budget?
It was still a relatively small budget. I mean, it's way, smaller budget than, movies made now. But back then, they didn't go super. I mean, you're talking a few million for most of those movies back then. So, I mean, it was still lower, but it wasn't like super low budget, like, say, Evil Dead was like, a year or two later. Box office, it made 3 billion Italian lira, which equates to 1.62 million U.S. dollars. So that's a pretty good return on investment.
Okay.
Principal players, we have Tissa Farrow, plays Anne Bowles, who is the, young woman looking for her physician father. She was also in the movie The Initiation of Sarah, which I think is kind of a witch-like movie we might cover later.
I thought you were going to say a porn.
I think it has elements of it's set in like a sorority house. So of course they probably have stuff like that.
Definitely and boobs.
And then she's in Anthropophagus, which is another pseudo zombie. It's not really a zombie. It's a cannibal, but like these teenagers go to this island, to relax or whatever. And then this creepy, disgusting looking, cannibal basically falls around, kills them and then eats them. So,
Okay.
He's going to eat you, like literally. Ian McCulloch plays Peter West. That's better than Dick North, I guess. who's a British newsman working in New York. If you look at his IMDb, it's just like lots of like little bit parts on TV is mainly what he was known for, which makes sense. I mean, a lot of these like low budget movies tend to tap in. Like nowadays, they tap into say the market for the Hallmark movie crowd, like they pull people that's on those shows or whatever. Cause they're they're all Vancouver. They all like, they've been on Supernatural. They've been on CW shows. He back in the day, that's kind of what this guy was. Richard Johnson. Which if you think of his name,
Dick Johnson
plays Dr. Menard in the Caribbean trying to treat a plague. And he's also a skeptic. He doesn't believe in the religious connotations of the people on the island. He was actually in the original Haunting movie that we've already covered from 1963.
Okay.
And he played an old man, obviously, in The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, which I do not recommend to people unless you just feel great about life and you need something to bring you down, because that is about the Holocaust and it's a dark movie. It's all I'm going to say. Al Cliver plays Brian Hull. He owns a boat, motherfucker. he will be back for our second half of this episode because he's also in The Beyond. Aretta Gay plays Susan Brett, who is her hobbies include scuba diving with no top on and standing perfectly still as a zombie tears her throat out.
Ooh, that is talent. That is talent.
She's in a movie, one of the Italian shockers called Ombre, which is like shadows, darkness, something like that's what it stands for. Stefania De Amaro plays Nurse Clara, Dr. Menard's assistant, who lingers just a little too long when she should get to moving.
Jesus fuck, I swear to God.
Just kind of stands there, and then a zombie pops up right at the end and takes her out. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we have Olga Carlatos playing Mrs. Menard, who has real eye for danger.
I'm getting out of here. The fucking dad jokes.
She's not a bad looker, though. I mean, for what little time she's in the movie before she gets her eye gouged out. Anyway, synopsis. A desolate sailboat is observed floating into the New York Harbor. When investigated by the Coast Guard, a zombie kills one of the two men, kills one of the two men investigating it before being shot and falling into the water. A news reporter and the daughter of the man who owned the boat navigate their way to the last known location of her father, Matul Island. Along the way, a zombie fights a shark. A woman loses sight of the situation. And the dead rise en masse to feast on the living.
Oh, my God.
When the earth spits out the dead, they will rise to suck the blood of the living. And that's one of their taglines. And I don't know where they get to suck the blood because that's not what they do.
There was no sucking going on in this movie. Fun or not, there was no sucking going on.
Other taglines. New York has a new problem, which, I mean, you know, that's real life. I mean, New York has a lot of problems. Another tagline is, if you love Dawn of the Dead, you'll just eat up zombie.
No, don't. Movies, don't do that. Don't compare yourself to other movies. You're setting yourself up for failure.
The Dead Are Among Us.
Okay, I can go with that one.
They will rise to suck the blood of the living, which is not true.
Mm-mm, that's lies. Don't lie.
And this one's too long, didn't read. When the earth spits out the dead, they will return to tear the flesh of the living, which that one's actually closer to what they actually do because they basically just rip you apart.
Oh, yeah.
So, quotes from the movie. I just picked one because this movie is not known for its dialogue. Let me tell you, folks. No. Most Fulci movies are not. From Peter West. What is all this about the dead coming back to life again and having to be killed a second time? I mean, what the hell's going on here? That's the kind of quality dialogue you can expect in a Fulci movie.
Well, that's the most quality we've gotten out of this movie.
These movies are known for their visuals. We'll just get right into it because every horror fan that talks about this movie, and I'm just going to throw it out there. It's kind of a spoiler. I am not the biggest fan of this movie. I know there's people out there that lose their mind over this movie. They all talk about the zombies in particular in the movie. The one zombie that rises up later in the graveyard that has the worms falling out of its eye socket. Yeah. The woman getting, you know, Olga getting her eye pulled through the splinter and you can see it poke through the eye. That's actually a good visual.
That was a good one. Yep.
Not that she's seeing it.
I mean, she saw it like literally firsthand. She literally watched the splinter go through her eyeball.
She did.
And then she saw nothing.
The zombies at the end of the movie are pretty decent with the fire effects and all that. I can't really be too negative on that. The other big scene that everybody talks about, well, there's the one fat zombie at the beginning of the movie. It's you got to remember at the time they had Romero's Dawn of the Dead to compare it to. These are better looking zombies than Romero's, to be honest.
It is way better looking zombies, and it's better looking gore, too.
Yes.
But that is expected from Italian horror.
That's what they do. I mean, we covered an Italian, you know, zombie movie, Della Morte Della More, and that's, I mean, the gore was on, you know, was on point in that movie. Even if you didn't think that the story was that great, I mean, it had to be, I mean, they did a good job with the visual effects. The other scene is the zombie fighting the shark, which is a big, it's always like, And the funny thing is the if you're watching it, the one scene at the end where the zombie's like desperately trying to bite the shark and can't really get a hold of it, it's kind of funny.
Okay. I don't know if you have this in trivia. So, and if you do, I don't want to discuss it now. But do we have any trivia on how they accomplished that?
The one bit of trivia that I remember about that is that it was the zombie was the trainer for the shark. So that makes sense why it was familiar enough with the trainer to let it just, you know, kind of manhandle it that way.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. So, because what I was getting at is it seemed like it was, like I said, we'll discuss it a little more, but it seemed like it was real in the sense of that was a person in the water with a shark.
It was. I mean, I don't know how. I don't think I had that in the trivia, like how long it took them to actually figure, you know, to make that. But it was actually somebody in the water with a shark. I mean, it was the actual trainer for the shark.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
Just like whenever we discussed Day of the Dead and those two fat zombies that walk out behind the alligator at the beginning of that movie, they were the trainers for or handlers for that alligator.
Yes.
Anything else about the visuals that, I mean, like, I watched the 4K version of it. I mean, it looks well enough. I mean, it doesn't have, like, a, you know, the old, like, super old look to it. It's just the fact that it's, I mean, there's nothing about this movie other than the gore effects that really stands out to me. I mean, I take that back. There's one scene at the end that everybody likes to quote because it's always, or likes to cite because it's always in the media for this movie, and it's the zombies on the bridge walking into New York. But the funny part of that is that they're walking on the top portion while a bunch of cars are driving underneath, which kind of defeats the visual image of the zombies invading. It's just like, people are like, there's shit up there. I'm just going to go, which is actually how New York would probably operate in the event of a zombie apocalypse, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's, you know, that's the big scene that the last big scene that people, you know, like to show, because this movie is kind of like a weird prequel to, you know, Romero's movie in a way. It's like showing where the zombies came from originally in another, or at least the Italian version of Romero's movie. I mean, it's like this is that's how they got into the big cities, is because they came from, you know, the Caribbean or whatever, kind of tying the zombie plague back to its, you know, voodoo roots and all that.
Okay.
I just, story-wise, it's like, it's threadbare. Like, there is really, I mean, there's zombies on this Caribbean island and they don't know why they're rising. There's some religious connotations, and they eventually just at the end of the movie rise up in mass and somehow all make their way to New York. And I don't even know how they get there, because the one zombie was on a boat, motherfucker. and I don't know how the rest of them got there. There was the one cop that was bit, and they show the scene where his fingers are twitching in the morgue. So you could maybe assume that one Coast Guard zombie rose and then started spreading it. But the zombies are coming in from outside of New York, so that still doesn't really fit the image that they're portraying at the end of the movie.
What I was going to say is that it's possible that the zombies came from somewhere else, but no, they didn't, because they're trying to insinuate that this island is where they were created and or originated.
Yeah, they say several times Matul Island is cursed, and the locals avoid it, and that's what they keep saying.
The locals avoid it, but is there another group of people that were curious? And this is just too far-fetched, because you shouldn't have to reach that far for an answer. So the only logical explanation I could have would be when the beginning scene, when we see them there, even if it was just one zombie that made it to New York, that one zombie was able to do his version of zombie fucking, aka biting, and impregnate a bunch of people with zombieism.
Yeah, but the movie doesn't set any of that up.
It doesn't.
It's all based on the island, and it's very scattershot, because, like, they have the scenes that are the one scene that they play twice where the one girl's father or whatever, Anna Bowles or whatever's father, is like, he's wrapped up completely in the sheets, and he rises up and then Dr. Menard like blows his brains out to like, you know, in the, you know, his zombieism. They show that twice in the movie. And then like, I mean, then just it so happens that cemetery, they just rise up in mass. Like it's just it there's a few scenes there. They don't really give any context other than the fact of have a few people in the background saying or like whenever the group comes to the hospital where Dr. Martinard was working, they see a zombie strapped to a table or whatever, and then they start to get kind of surrounded and they back out of there and then they get away. But like there's once they get to the island, there's no real story development other than showing the zombies.
But that's, I feel like that's pretty common with Italian movies. And it's funny because now that I think about it, Italian horror is so, people know Italian horror. They know about it. They talk about it. But do Italians, like, are they like Americans where they complain when something's not good? Like, you can't have, in America, you almost have to have at least two out of three of the trifecta. You have to have horror, good acting, and good cinematography. Sometimes two out of three will work. You can't just have one. I feel like really all Italian has is visual. They don't have the cinematography.
If you're talking about the Italian horror with regards to like the giallos that we covered during slasher season, they do have at least two out of the three things you're talking about. They usually have either great music and like, you know, good visuals, or they have an intriguing story with good visuals. They almost always focus on the visual stuff.
Yes.
Going all the way back, even to like the '50s and all that, when Italians made like horror movies, I mean, first of all, they needed a sexy woman in there, which nobody can fault them for because, you know, that brings people to the audience. But they also wanted, like, something visually, like, you know, interesting, because I feel like that goes back to, like, some of their, like, you know, like earlier theatrical stuff that they would do. Like, they, I mean, were more about, like, just showing things visually as opposed to, like, you know, maybe necessarily not as dense story-wise. But the giallos, they mixed it up. They actually had some good stories. I don't feel like any of the Italian films I think Della Morte or however it's said, I think that Cemetery Man, I think that movie has a good story once you kind of decipher it. But I feel like all these older ones, they were just kind of like, fuck it. Here's some visuals and some weird shit going on. Enjoy it. And they didn't really... The zombie movies didn't really do anything else with it.
Yeah. And we have four categories that we base our reviews on, which is the visuals, the story, the acting, and the music. And they definitely have the music. Unfortunately, it doesn't fit more modern times. It is what it is. You know, there's a lot of 80s films that are that way as well. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So technically, I feel like if you have two out of four, that's pretty decent, you know, in terms of a film. I feel like sometimes they really only have visuals.
I don't think the acting, it's way overblown. That's the Italian style in a lot of films.
And I'm wondering if Italians, if that's what they prefer. Like, do they see that and they're like, this is amazing, this is how it should be? Whereas in America, we're like, calm down, you know?
There's a part of me that wonders if it's a cultural thing. Because you know how, like, Italians, like, speak with their hands,
they're animated. And all that.
Like, I wonder if, like, being out there that way is more like their culture. So, like, to them, that is better acting. Like, they don't like subtle acting because it's, like, losing a lot of the, I don't know, like, just the emotive things that, like, Italians are used to. Whereas in, like, English, it's like you want to pull it back, you know. Like, you want to see, like, their effects on their face more. Maybe not, like, you know, and if they start speaking really loud and all that, they better be screaming for a good reason, or they're basically just being a loud, obnoxious asshole, you know, and there's nothing, you know. It's probably a cultural thing. It's just when I see Italian acting, I'm like, that ain't my style. I don't really care for that, so.
Yeah. So we've discussed visuals. We disgusted. I am disgusted that there is no storyline. I'm just kidding.
I mean, there is, but there it's, I mean, it's simple as fuck. It's literally just zombie on a boat, go back to where it came from, Caribbean Island. There's zombies that rise up for no reason, big action scenes, and your movie's over. Woo, that's what you get. So
the acting, there was, the zombies did great.
the zombies were actually good. I wouldn't give them that. Like, I mean, especially the one zombie with the you know, worms falling out of its eyes. I mean, that, you know, and something else that this movie, this is in the trivia, they had, he specifically wanted all the zombies in this movie to never actually, you couldn't see their eyes. They were always looking down because for that, to him, that like showed their like death status more than like them like staring at whoever they were going after. It's like, if they were looking down, it's, I don't know. It's almost like it took on like almost a religious like death connotation or something. If you didn't see their eyes. So that's kind of a Fulci, you know, choice or whatever, but
yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. I'm at a loss for words because the women were like switches. They were on or they were off. And when they were on, I thought they were pretty good. Like, I thought the being scared by the shark was pretty legit. And then the, you know, underwater zombie scene, you know, but after that, like when she got back on the boat, who the fuck was she? The lady that got the doctor's wife, Mrs. Menard, if you will.
Yeah.
When she was getting her eyeball gouged out, amazing. When she, prior to that, some of the worst acting I've ever seen, honestly. And it's so crazy because there was no in between. There was no gray area. It was either, like I said, light switch off, light switch on. That was primarily the women. The guys, for the first time, the guys were pretty annoying in this film.
I think the only time that the guys in the movie actually, to me, felt realistic was the one British guy whenever he's in New York and he's like trying to get like the actual stuff or whatever as far as the story. Other than that, once he got like mixed up with the one guy who owns the boat, Brian or whatever, like after that, it was just like, you all are worthless. Like, there's nothing that you're doing.
Okay, I'm so glad you said that because these guys, you know how like women will be running from a serial killer and they fucking fall because bitches always be tripping? That's what these guys were. They were not, they were not men to me in this story. They weren't offering any kind of real protection. Which is sad because the women were even worse, so technically the guys were, but it was only by default. It wasn't like for any manly reasons or whatever. It was
in particular the one that cracks me up is whenever the one chick, the topless chick from the, you know, the zombie and the shark or whatever, when she gets her throat ripped out because Brian's too busy trying to, I mean, he does save the British guy and then the Anna or whatever, because they're getting like, the zombies are like, which is actually a good gore scene where they're like ripping into the like flesh of their legs or whatever while they're laying down. He saves them from that, but then when he comes back, it's just like, he's too late to do anything, and it's just, and then he's kind of got a moment like, well, I guess I'll cry about her. All right, anyways, moving on. You know, it's anybody that's ever watched Top Gear, it's kind of like Jeremy Clarkson whenever he would do that one part where he'd do the sit down and he would look at the camera and he's like, and anyways, moving on, you know, like he would always do that segment.
Oh, my God.
And it was like, and at the end of the movie, too, I think that's when, like, one of them gets taken out and I could have swore it was, like, Brian or whoever. It's the same kind of situation because, like, they even have a gun there and it's just like, oh no, I just missed saving you. Oh, anyways, let's go. You know, that's kind of how it ends up being. So,
well, the show must go on.
That's literally that's how they are in the movie. And the fact that the women in the movie just basically sit there. I mean, like that nurse, the one guy, the other orderly, the black orderly or whatever had just been bitten, I believe. And they were requesting that she bring them the gasoline or whatever so they could, like, napalm the zombies, Molotov cocktail the zombies as they're coming in the building, which is a cool scene, don't get me wrong. But she's standing there, and she takes forever. ever to move. And of course the black zombie rises up, you know, the orderly who's just been bit, and he bites her, and then she's like, ah! And then that's like the end of it. And I'm like, is everyone in this movie just stand still while they get throats ripped out? I mean, it gets ridiculous.
Nice and calm. Maybe they've given up, you know, like I could be like, if I just wanted to take a nap, I'd probably just lay there while I was getting my throat ripped out. Cause I could just like, wait, I get to sleep eternally now. Wait, I might get turned into a zombie. No. I don't want this.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. These are drive-in schlock movies, so you don't expect good acting. You don't expect a good story. But at the same time, I can't hold them to that standard because we have good zombie movies. Yes. I mean, you say what you want. Romero's movie, I mean, it was goofy. I mean, the one that came out around the time that this one, Dawn of the Dead. But, I mean, it had a point. It had a... I mean, the story arc was actually decent for the survivors. Yeah. And I mean, the whole capitalism is consumerism is we're, you know, we're no better than brainless zombies. Just, I mean, it was saying something in this movie and all the Italian movie, and even, and it was started by Dario Argento because he literally looked at that, said, fuck all that nonsense. I'm going to keep every bit of the, now to his credit, he did cut out a lot of the goofy, like, you know, pies and faces and all that, I think.
Yeah.
So good on him. But he looked at all that context and he's like, you know what? Fuck that. I'm just going to have a bunch of scenes where a bunch of zombies are eating people and then they're getting their brains blown out. And because he did that, all the Italian movies are like, yep, we don't need plots. That's what we're doing in our movies. And that's what you get with them. And it's just like, I feel like I can expect a little bit more out of these movies than just, I mean, you know, standard women that just kind of stand there. Just, I mean, let's go back to Night of the Living Dead. There's that trope that goes back to Barbara from the first movie. She literally falls 15 times running away from the graveyard zombie. And the women in this movie are not much better. Actually, they're worse because they stay catatonic like Barbara was toward the end of the movie and they don't do anything.
Yeah, actually, now that I think about it, maybe they took a little bit of too much inspiration.
A little from Romero's too first much movie.
Inspo, yes.
I don't know. I don't know what else to say about it before getting in reviews, so if you want me to get in the trivia, I can. I mean, there's a lot to discuss
music?
Well, let's discuss it. I mean, Fabio Fritzi, he's well-respected. Like I said, a lot of horror fans love it. And the music is good. It's got a Caribbean vibe to it, this movie. That's what it is.
Did this one come off a little cheery to you? Did the music come off a little cheery to you?
It does, yeah.
Okay, good. I'm like, am I crazy? Like, and I also have to remember, because I watched two of these.
I can't fault it, though, because remember, Day of the Dead, which has a similar Caribbean beat as the music, is my favorite movie. So I can't fault it for that cheery beat.
Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead. Which one is you talking about? The gong? Gonk?
No, I'm talking about Day of the Dead when, you know, it was like, I mean, anytime they showed like John, the helicopter pilot whatever, it was always like that little doot, 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 you know, like that little Caribbean beat in the background that they were always playing, you know?
Apparently, I erase that from my memory because
I think I brought it up and you didn't remember it even then. Like, I mean, so I think you did, but because the gonk stood out so much to you. But
that's the one I heard. Okay, but yeah, because normally what the thing about Italian horror films is that I always feel like the music is so dramatic but not appropriately dramatic. Like, this is novella, you know, type music. This is daytime, you know, soap opera, which is very Italian.
Yeah, I mean, that it makes sense for, I mean, their culture for it to sound the way that it does. Yeah. I mean,
so not much to say about the music. I just want to discuss because I didn't feel like it. I can't say it didn't add to the movie. It's exactly what I would have expected, you know, from this Italian movie. I just sometimes I wish it was a little bit better. So
it's the biggest issue we have with foreign films and horror movies because we expect the harpsichord, you know, like the little bit of like a piano, like tink, 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 tink. And then like it's brawl, like whenever something pops up and like, you know, all these other places are playing like Japanese horror movies are playing pop music over top of some of the scenes. And you're like, Why are they playing like this sweet saccharine, you know, like J-pop music over top of this scene? It doesn't fit. Maybe in their culture it does, but like we're watching it and it's like you just hear like these little happy like Japanese girls like, you know, da 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 da, and it's like that's yeah, and the little giggles, and it's like that's not horrific at all. This doesn't fit. What are you doing?
Oh my God, so dumb.
Trivia for this movie. While shooting on location in New York City, Captain Haggerty, who plays the large bald zombie who attacks the Harbor Patrol at the beginning of the film, walked into CBGB's, a tiny Bowery bar, which was the punk rock scene at the time, and in full zombie makeup, complete with splattered fake blood and mud caked all over his face, because that's the other thing. Fulci zombies are considered mud zombies because they got that muddy, you know, yeah, like caked on look, which is not bad. It actually looks like decayed flesh, so it works pretty well. But anyways, he walks in with a whole getup on, and due to the fact that the punks were just like so, either they were so checked out or they were just so used to outrageous looks, nobody paid him any fucking attention. Even the bartender didn't even give him two looks.
That's pretty funny, actually.
Since there was no CGI at the time, and the production didn't have the budget for fancy animatronics, a real tiger shark was used from the zombie versus shark fight. As the tiger shark is one of the most dangerous shark species, the shark's trainer, Ramon Bravo, fed the shark right before filming, as well as doping it up with sedatives before filming that scene.
You know what's so funny about that is that I found out that there's certain sharks that are only opportunistic hunters, meaning if you feed them well, and often you can just swim around with them. Tiger sharks are not one of those. So it is kind of surprising. I mean, pretty smart that they doped it up and everything. But, like, that's fucking bold as fuck.
Male lions are the same way you're describing. If you feed them, they literally will not do shit. I mean, in a lot of cases, it takes a lot from them to do anything anyways. It's actually the female lions, I believe, that do most
they're
of the hunting.
They're the hunters. I was like, oh, my God, they don't need no man except to have babies. It was just fucking funny.
It is.
Because really, Noah was saying, I was showing him a video of a male lion that tried to attack one of the babies. And the fucking mom and the aunt jumped in and was like, I'll fuck you up. And Noah's like, oh, yeah. He was like, he's like, it's like human women. He was like, but he's like, we tend to be able to provide a little bit more in the human species. He goes, but lions, he's like, no, they don't need him. They'll fucking murder his ass.
The male lions literally only exist to fuck, eat, and to fight off other male lions. That's all they fucking do. And females actually have to keep them away from young male lions because they will try to kill them.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. It's wild.
So Rene Cardona Jr. was originally cast to be the underwater zombie. However, he got sick at the last minute and had to be replaced by the shark's trainer, Ramon Bravo.
Yeah, I would have gotten sick too. First of all, I don't want to be underwater. Second, I don't want to be a zombie underwater. Third, don't add a shark to the fucking drama. We don't need that.
Can we at least give credit to Lucio Fulci for having makeup that was that fucking, was able to stay on underwater?
Well, it was definitely like some kind of rubber mask or something, because you could see the plain lines of the good face underneath it. But I'm not even upset. I am not going to nitpick at that, because it worked so well that if I wasn't looking that closely, I probably would have never noticed. The whole scene itself was actually pretty fucking legit.
I mean, it takes balls to make a scene like that. I'll give him that.
100%.
The zombies in this film were modeled to resemble the Caribbean voodoo legends of The Walking Dead from Haitian and Caribbean legends of people being reanimated after death, in contrast to the zombies in Romero's Dawn of the Dead and other zombie films. Nearly all of these zombies walk with their heads down, their eyes closed, and their arms always at their sides. Only three zombies featured have their eyes open.
Hmm. Damn. I didn't notice.
Yeah, it's you see it a lot later on when there was more of them. They all kind of just like their heads are down. They're just kind of walking forward.
I can understand the head down thing. I did not know the eyes closed was a thing.
Yeah. Okay. Despite being called Zombie 2, the film is not a sequel to anything. When Dawn of the Dead was released under the title Zombie in Italy, the film was retitled Zombie 2 to cash in on the success of the American film.
Okay.
This was done by the studio without director Lucio Fulci's permission or knowledge, and he often told fans that this wasn't a sequel and that it's its own film. He was relieved to find that the film's title in America was just kept as Zombie because it makes it different from Romero's version. So,
I don't understand why it's called Zombie 2, but all right.
They were just like, Zombie, Z-O-M-B-I, made a ton of money. We're going to make this Zombie 2 and cash in on it.
Yeah.
They made a bunch of these movies. The ones later get progressively more stupid. Like, they've got one called Zombie 5 Killing Birds, which is literally about zombie crows, I believe.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. The newspaper office scene was filmed in a busy office building that at one point the cast and crew inadvertently interrupted a meeting held by Rupert Murdoch, who angrily kicked them out.
What the fuck?
Yeah, he big newspaper man back in the day. According to Ian McCulloch on the DVD commentary, the Harbor Patrol cops were actually off-duty policemen. The advantage was that they had to use no costumes because they brought their own.
Hell yeah.
Like many Italian horror films of the time, half the cast spoke only English and the other half only Italian. Many Italian films produced for international distribution filmed without sound and recorded several dialogue tracks in different languages for the studio to later overdub. Because the actors are speaking a number of different languages, or some speaking a non-native language phonetically, the dubbing in all versions of the film is not 100% synchronized. And you can tell that. You can tell when the Americans or the English speakers are speaking because it matches up better than the Italians.
Yeah.
We had that same issue with another zombie movie earlier in this. Last Man on Earth with Vincent Price. That was done the same way. It was because all of the other people besides Vincent Price were speaking Italian, so like all their lines were like overdubbed that way.
Yeah.
As shown in the trailers before the film was released, airline barf bags were handed out to theater moviegoers due to the unusual high amount of violence and gore for a horror film of that time.
Smart, but so dramatic.
Yeah, you got to sell it somehow.
Yeah, no, I appreciate them. If that's what they were doing was to sell it, totally different. But if there was actually people throwing up in them, fuck off.
Well, there's people that supposedly were vomiting during Terrifier 2 and Terrifier 3. So, I mean,
although the gore
in those movies are way worse. So
yes, it is. But I got real, you're going to love it, Human Centipede. That's very barf-inducing.
I can imagine. I do not look forward to reviewing that movie whatsoever. You are dragging me down a terrible, terrible place that I never want to be.
Human horror. I'm going to be dragging you down the whole time. It's don't worry. My morality is going to go down as well. We're going to be.
Listen, a lot of human horror. If we're sticking to the thriller side of it, I love those movies. Will give Seven. I mean, Seven's gross. But Seven is a fucking amazing movie.
Oh, understandably, yes. But we're gonna get sick with it. We're gonna get down with the sickness.
But I do not like torture porn movies, and we're gonna review a shit ton of those.
We are. At least half of that season is gonna be torture porn.
Speaking of Seven, I'm gonna throw this out there. I was made aware that there is a show that was on FX, now on Hulu, called Grotesquerie.
Oh, I heard about it.
It stars Niecy Nash, and it is a Ryan Murphy show of American Horror Story fame.
Okay.
First few episodes will get you really into the show because they have some of the most graphic scenes that I've ever seen put to TV.
Okay.
There is a family the very first scene, it's kind of stuff out of Seven. That's a coworker of mine said that they'd started watching it. And I mentioned Seven. I was like, all right, that's right up my alley. You're speaking my language. And I started watching, and it is. It's religious connotations. Like, there's a reenactment of the Last Supper with dead bodies, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The only problem is it does not stick the landing. There is a twist in the seventh episode. I'm not going to say what it is for people out there that want to watch it, but there is a major twist. And after that point, the show just spins its wheels because it doesn't do anything but cycle back to what it had already done. And it's dumb the way that they ended the show.
Well, that fucking blows.
So it starts out good. It gets really... The fifth episode gets that Ryan Murphy quirk to it that I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of outside of like his comedy shows. Like, we didn't cover it. I want to cover it the next time we do Slashers, which is his Scream Queen series. It's, you know, that kind of comedy that he puts in his shows or whatever.
Yeah.
They start doing that in the fifth episode of this show and it doesn't fit because... I mean, it's peppered in other places, but it's really hits in the fifth episode, and I don't understand why they do it, because the show is the most graphic and dark thing that I've ever seen him do, including American Horror Story. So why do you start peppering in that stupid quirky comedy in like the fifth episode? Like, it doesn't make sense.
I feel like the thing with Ryan Murphy is that I feel like he needs to constantly do something new to keep his creative juices flowing, because I'm like that. I like change, whereas I know a lot of people don't. I like to constantly, you know, maybe I redo a room in my house or something, or I redo my desk at work or something like that, like completely. Like I just move from one desk to another at my work, and I love it. Excuse me, as I'm choking right now. I get all choked up about this stuff. But I feel like Ryan Murphy, he needs to, I noticed that when he tries a new project, and I'm not talking about a new season of American Horror Story, I think he's done. I think he's done being creative for that show. I hate to say it, but sometimes he has something else going on, and I find that it really does good for the first, I guess I should only say the first half of the season, you know, or maybe a season or two, and then he starts to taper off. I feel like he needs something new, even if it's not horror every time.
Yeah, but that's part of my problem with this show. And actually, I say that it comes out of nowhere. Once they do the twist, it makes sense why it gets quirky, but it's not a good reason.
What the
twist? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So anyways, if anybody wants to watch it, Seven brought it up. If you like Seven, the first four episodes are right up your alley. They fit right in there. After that, goes way downhill real quick. So actually, I take that back. So he goes from the fifth episode, which is all that quirky humor and some weirdness, to the sixth episode, where he literally shows women who have been tied to the bed have involuntary C-sections done to them. They're left to die, and the babies have been harvested and taken off somewhere else. That's the type of show it is, but then it mixes in this weird comedy in the middle of it, which makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, and Hulu, if you would like to sponsor us, we're looking for sponsors. Thank you.
They won't sponsor us because they're owned by Disney primarily. And we know we say too many shit things about Disney.
What, shit like fuck Disney? I don't know.
Yeah. Cancel Disney Plus.
Borrow your cousin's password.
Yeah. Anyways, getting back to this film, it was written before Dawn of the Dead, believe it or not.
Wow.
Was released in Italy as an action-adventure thriller with no link to Romero's films. The opening and closing scenes, which take place in New York, were added to the script later when the producers wanted to cash in on the success of Dawn. Interestingly, Dawn actor David Emge, who plays Flyboy, the best zombie in Dawn of the Dead, and zombies Tissa Farrow died a mere 10 days apart from one another in January of this year.
Wow. Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, so, that's why whenever I said at the beginning in the intro that they dusted up whenever the success of Zombies, Zombi, and they dusted off movies that weren't zombie movies and kind of slapped them, that this is one of them. It's like they had this movie, and they're like, oh, well, shit, that's going to make money. We've got some shit to dump out there, too, and that's what they did.
Okay.
Hollywood does that all the time, so Italians can't be, you know, we can't get onto them for doing it. It's just smart business sense.
Yeah.
The makeup effects were done by renowned Italian Gianetto De Rossi. The makeup for the zombies was caked on in several stages, and Lucio Fulci, the director, constantly referred to the extras as walking flower pots.
The hell?
Although the title Zombie 2 was given by producers to cash in on Zombies, a.k.a. Dawn of the Dead's success, scriptwriter Dardano Sacchetti based his script to Zombie 2 on I Walked with a Zombie, Voodoo Island, and The Walking Dead, not the TV series, but the 1936 movie, stating that he wanted to bring the zombie genre back to its Caribbean and voodoo roots.
I mean, respect, because really that's what it is, even though that's not what I recognize it as.
Dardano Sacchetti chose to take his name off the credits due to his father's death during pre-production. As a result of his loss, Sacchetti felt uncomfortable about being connected with a movie about the dead returning to a semblance of life and then being destroyed. I feel like that's overreacting, yeah. But at the same time, I mean, when you lose a parent, I mean, you get in the feels, I mean, in a way that it's hard to describe. So I can't fault him for that. I mean,
guess so, but I could see myself doing that if my dad was super disappointed. Like if I was making a movie about the devil or witchcraft and my dad's like, I told you were studying witchcraft and devilism, whatever. I'd probably be like, okay, he passed away. Like, I can't do it. You know, like it's exactly what he accused me of, etc. I might consider, but I probably wouldn't. I'm also a hard ass. So, you know, there's that.
According to the production crew interviewed by the Shriek Show DVD, scenes were shot of the zombies coming out of the water in New York. They never made it to the final edit, though. That would have been cool to see.
Stupid. Why didn't they do that? That would have been sick.
That actually makes more sense of why they would have walked under the ocean, somehow eventually made it to New York in their yard. That would have explained it a little bit.
You know what would have been even cooler? If there was a guy that had a clear shark bite on him.
That would have been good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would have been a good thing.
Sometimes I get this noodling, you know?
Several of the actors playing the zombies were actually brothers. They look so familiar that some people have speculated that all the zombies were played by one man.
apparently their makeup wasn't good enough because they should have been able to cover that up.
The film was released unrated in the U.S. since the MPAA would have given it an X rating, and it was easier then to get unrated films in the mainstream theaters than X-rated ones. That Romero took advantage of that all the time. Like, yeah. If they even attempted to slap an X, he's like, nope, I'm doing it myself. It's unrated. Fuck you all.
Wait, you can do that? You can rate your own movie, or you can unrate your own movie?
You can unrate your own movie and just put it in a theater.
I would want to do that all the time because, like, people would be like, it's unrated? Fuck, I want to see this.
Well, now you could probably get by with it. Back then, remember that the unrated movies typically went to theaters where men were, you know, basically pulling a Pee Wee Herman and jacking it. So it didn't really get your film out there to everybody when you did the unrated. Nowadays, I think with Terrifier going on, you could probably get by with unrated and it would actually sell your movie.
Yeah. I feel like back then there was theaters that were into the macabre or into the B films, if you will. And they probably weren't considered B films back then, but they're like, hey, this is different. You know, here you go. And there's always been a fan base for that.
Yeah, there always is. And there's fans who will seek it out. It's just, if you want to get the most out of your movies, you had to play ball with MPAA. And then even with that, if they slapped an R rating on it, I mean, you were really limiting the audience back in those days because, I mean, it took a lot to get R ratings. Remember, Poltergeist is PG.
So dumb. I don't know how they pulled that one off other than the fact that Steven Spielberg is technically attached.
I don't know. It literally has a scene where a man is ripping the skin off of his face and they gave it a PG rating. So,
I'm trying to word this properly in terms of scary movies and ratings, but you know, I lost it. It's gone. If it comes back, I'll interrupt you.
Okay. Well, speaking of ratings, I can't give this above a 2.5 and I'm tempted to give it a 2. Like,
wow.
I the gore gets it entirely within that rating. Like it gets it halfway to a 5 on a 2.5 because of the gore, and I respect what he did. But the lack of a story, the Italian overacting, the Fabio Fritzi, like you said, like I get the man was talented. I'm not denying it whatsoever. The music sounds good. It's just that little Caribbean beat in the background does. I mean, like none of that gels to me. I do not watch this movie and think, you know what? I want to watch this movie constantly. I want to make this my thing. It's like, Day of the Dead, fuck yeah, that is my thing. But I'd watch it any day of the week. But this, no, I can't do it. Like I was watching this movie and I'm like, God, it made the second time I tried to do it too, because I tried watching it about a year ago for the first time. And I know horror fans would be like, first time? What are you, 40? Yes, I'm 43. For the first time, I tried watching this last year when Joe Bob Briggs had it on his, you know, drive-in special that he had. And I got a little bit past the scene where the zombie was on the boat or whatever. And even with Joe Bob giving all of his little, you know, interesting tidbits in between the scenes, I was falling asleep. And I'm like, nope, can't do it. Now, I stayed awake during this version of watching it. But it's just like, I watched it and I'm just like, the end of the movie is where it picks up for me and it gets good when the zombies are attacking them and they're throwing the Molotovs and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And of course the individual scenes, like the zombie and the shark and the eyeball, but there's a lot of shit in between those scenes. Oh, yeah. Like a lot. And I'm just like, please, for the love of God, like I just keep it moving. Keep going.
I'm exactly where you are. I before you even gave your rating, I was like, this gets half of the score for me. And the only thing, well, I guess two technically, that brings it up is, well, I guess this would fall under the visuals. The zombies, the gore, and the shark. That shit was amazing.
Yes. But then
it was good. The shit that was happening to people, the ripping apart of the bodies, you know, your girl loves gore. I'm a gore girly, okay? But the visuals were okay. The story, the acting, and the music were hot garbage. And yeah, this movie was a snooze fest.
It was.
Absolute snooze fest.
I anytime you say that on some of these movies, I'm like, I don't know where you're getting it from, but if you claim it on this one, I totally get it, because the scenes especially between when that first zombie's on the boat, all the way up to where they fight the zombie shark, snooze fest, the scenes between when they're getting the boat to the island and then the scenes in the cemetery where the zombies start rising up and then they rip the woman's, all that's snooze fest. I'm like, and that is like I feel like it's at least a third, if not half of the movie right there, just snooze fest.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was bad, and I did stay awake for the whole film, so shockingly, I was able to do that, but I was like, this movie blows. So yeah, it's a 2.5 for me, because it's sad because I really don't feel like the rest of the movie matched the visuals of the gore and the zombies and the shark. The shark, that was fucking bold for back then.
It's bold for right now. If they did that now, it'd be a fucking CGI shark. It fucking would. That's, you know, true. It would be.
Yeah, which sucks.
But I mean, I don't know. I can't give it any higher than that. And I know there's probably fans out there. It's like, oh, you're missing the intricacies of it. It's like, fine. Send us messages. We love it whenever you correct us on our interpretations.
Oh, yeah. But I'm all for hearing what you guys have to say in you know, conjunction with or against, whatever you want it to be. I mean, if people are making fun of you for not seeing this movie, you're 43. To be fair, I'm 42 and I haven't seen Hereditary yet. Everyone's like, you need to see that movie. And I'm like, I'm waiting. So, we're gonna record it.
Here's the thing about Hereditary. That movie is one of the few movies that has gave me any kind of feeling in a bad way a movie in a long time.
I cannot wait.
I walked out of that movie feeling it was a true definition of horror. It was, you know how they're scared, they're terrified.
Yes.
You know, when you jump and your heart's racing. No, I walked out of that movie and I had that creeping anxiety up, you know.
Oh, I can't wait so much. My daughter liked it. And she's Little Miss Nothing Scares Me. I don't think the movie scared her, but she liked it. She does not understand why her dad doesn't like it. She's like, that movie was a hella good movie. And my son is terrified by that movie. So
here's the thing about that movie, though. I don't know how you're going to react to it, because there's a lot of creepy shit in that movie, but there's scenes in the movie that's just like, what the fuck? So those would be up your alley. But the thing that I got from the movie, and the reason I liked it, and a lot of people laugh, especially toward the end of the movie, is that I didn't see anything in that. I was always seeing the meaning behind what was in the movie and not the actual things on screen.
Okay.
Because there's some scenes toward the end of the movie that are laughable whenever you just take them in context of what's being shown to you. Mm-hmm. But the movie's called Hereditary for a reason. And as soon as I clued into what the director was meaning by the movie, I'm like, that's why it creeped me out. I'm like, okay, I know what this movie's actually about. And that's why all this weird stuff's happening is tied into that. And I feel like you have to tie into that concept or the movie's just kind of like, what the fuck did I just watch? That's kind of dumb.
For any of the listeners out there, I have a challenge for you. No, it's more of a challenge for me, but let's see if you're listening and you make it this far. And you think that, because Hereditary is going to be what, in which season? Where does Hereditary go? Human horror?
It's the meaning is human horror. The movie itself is closer to witch/cult movie.
Okay. So that's a minimum of 2 to 4 seasons away. Because we got a lot going on. We've got when bad animals go bad, we got vampires, we've got human horror, we've got quite a bit. We get enough people in the comments that think, I need to watch this movie before we hit that. Let us know. I don't know what our number would be.
I want people to get out there and say it because you need to see it before then. Yes. It's worth watching.
So let me know, special request, if you want me to watch Hereditary sooner than what we do, human and or witch season. Let us know in the comments. Sound off. La Llorona needs to see Hereditary sooner, and then we will record that a lot sooner. We're not going to wait till those seasons to record it. I am dying to see it, so I really hope I hear back from people. I don't know if we're going to. It would be nice, though, if you did.
I would also argue that the movie Men is the opposite of Hereditary in my sense, because what I see on screen was cool. The meaning behind that movie just got repetitive, because the meaning behind that movie, I'm just going to throw it out there, is that men are all evil, and they will repeatedly either try to use a woman's body or use her or in some other way. And that's all men are good for. And that's all the movie's about. But if you watch the movie, it's actually about the Green Man and all the creepy lore that comes from the Celtic stuff from that. Ew. So the movie itself is cool. But whenever you start delving, it's like, okay, I'm tired of this message. Stop hammering that men are terrible and they will just either rape you or they will use you to serve them in some other way. And that's all that men view women as. Yeah. That's all the movie has going on as far as its core meaning. So anyways, again, send us messages if you think this movie in particular is the best thing since sliced bread and why you think that. Cause I'm open to seeing this with new eyes. If somebody can explain to me what is so great about this movie that Romero didn't do better, just throwing it out there.
Yeah, I concur.
And with that, folks, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.